This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, TV critic for the New York Daily News, sitting in for Terry Gross. Our guest Neil Young gives a very moving performance in his recent performance film, Neil Young, Heart of Gold, which has just come out on DVD. It was directed by Jonathan Demme, and we'll hear from him as well. Demme's other films include Silence of the Lambs, Something Wild, and Philadelphia. Heart of Gold was filmed in Nashville at the Ryman Auditorium, the former home of the Grand Ole Opry, with a band of old friends. Terry spoke with Neil Young and Jonathan Demme a few months ago when Heart of Gold was in theaters. The songs in the first half of the film are from his album Prairie Wind, which was written and recorded in the period when Young was diagnosed with and treated for a brain aneurysm. Neil Young told Terry that he had been having some strange eye problems that turned out to be the result of a visual migraine. He was able to treat those problems with aspirin. But while the doctors were looking into the cause of the visual problems, they discovered something that was unrelated but more serious, a brain aneurysm.
So I was fortunate to have a great neurologist who I'd met, his name is Dexter Sun, and he was there in New York, and he told me in his Chinese way that I'd had this aneurysm for 100 years, and he was showing me on the big readout that they had, this big piece of film, and you could see the thing kind of looked like Florida hanging off of the United States. And I was looking at it, and it kind of scared me at first, and then that he said, you know, Neil, he said, you've had this for 100 years. There's nothing to worry about. For you, it's nothing to worry about. For me, I have to get rid of it as soon as possible. It has to go. We have to get rid of it. It has to be gone from your head. And I said, well, how do we do that? And he said, well, I need to make some calls, and we're going to set up an appointment for you with this surgeon, Dr. Gobin, at the Presbyterian, New York Presbyterian. So they did that. And I went. Then Dr. Gobin wasn't going to be in for a couple of days. So I had 3 or 4 days between when he was coming in and then. So rather than sit around knowing that I had an aneurysm and just sit in New York with my aneurysm, I decided to go to Nashville and do what I was going to do in the first place and then fly back. So I went in there and I recorded The Painter, and then I recorded the next song I wrote was I Wonder. The next day I wrote that the evening after The Painter, and the following morning I wrote that, and then we recorded it. And then I wrote Falling Off the Face of the Earth that night and the next morning, and we recorded it. And then I went back to New York and met the Dr. Gobin, and we scheduled the procedure for 10 days from that point. And then I went back to Nashville and finished the record.
So was your life in jeopardy at this point?
Well, you know, it's one of those things where your life is in jeopardy if you have this thing. And on one hand, one doctor was telling me everything was okay, you know, I can fly, you can do whatever you want to do, and you've had this for a long time, there's no reason to change what you're doing, and just go on with your life, and we'll take care of it here in a week or two, and everything will be fine. And other doctors were telling me, you know, don't lean down to tie your shoes, you know, have someone else tie your shoes for you, don't put your head down. And because, you know, if you put your head down really fast and then bring it back up, there's a lot of pressure happens there or something. And this was an ugly one. It was it's a series of bubbles that form. Like if you think of one of your arteries as like a bicycle tube, And,
I'd rather
which
not.
Is easy for me to do that. So I have a Schwinn brain. So anyway, I was riding along on my balloon tires, and suddenly I realized there was this huge bump on my tire. And then, you know, what happens is that's a weakness in the wall of the vein, and so the pressure makes this bubble come out. And I had a series of six or seven bubbles on top of bubbles.
Gee.
So that was was getting thinner every time it happened. So it was obvious that Florida had to go. And, you know, we had to get rid of that state.
I want to play the song Falling Off the Face of the Earth. You mentioned this is one of the songs that you wrote right before the procedure. And it's just such a beautiful song. And it's about like an older person's love, not like new romantic, I've just fallen in love, but the kind of love that you have with somebody who you've been with for a very long time. And it's a very beautiful song. Would you say a little bit about writing the song, Neil Young?
Well, the writing Falling Off the Face of the Earth is really a case of I had a melody that I was writing that I just come up with that night. And then I was going to bed and I couldn't come up with the lyrics, but I had a melody and chord changes. And so I thought, well, you know, I'll just go to sleep and I'll wake up in the morning and start playing the changes and the words will be there. So I checked my voicemail and I had a message from Jim Jarmusch on the who did my film Year of the Horse.
An earlier concert film.
An earlier concert film of Crazy Horse, which is like almost the polar opposite of this film in some ways. Because of the musical content. But anyway, Jim and I are good friends, and he sent me, left a voicemail. And it seemed, I'm not sure if he knew that I had this aneurysm or if he didn't, but he was just thinking about me, and so he left me a message, and some of the phrases that are in the message, I played it again, and I wrote down some of the phrases that he used. And then in the morning I had the song all done because some of the phrases that he used in the voicemail were in the I just used them out of context in this song, and it kind of opened up the door for everything else, so the chorus and everything all just fell out.
Did he say something about feeling like he's falling off the face of the earth, or that?
No, he said, I just want to thank you for all the things you've done. You know, it's we've done some special things together.
Huh.
You know, there's it may sound simple, but you know, things like that, little phrases that are in the song.
Well, it's a beautiful song. Let's hear it. And this is the version from Neil Young's CD, Prairie Wind. He also performs it in the new concert film, which is called Neil Young, Heart of Gold.
Just want to thank you for all of the things you've done. I've been thinking about you. I just want to send my love. I send my best to you. That's my message of love.
That's Neil Young singing his song Falling Off the Face of the Earth. We heard the version on his CD, Prairie Wind. He also performs it in the new concert movie, Neil Young, Heart of Gold, which is directed by Jonathan Demme, who is also with us. Neil Young, I think of that as a song, you know, although you said that the idea for the song came from a Jim Jarmusch phone call. In my mind, it's a song for your wife. I don't know. there's any truth to that. But that's how I hear it when I hear it.
I agree. I think that it, that's the magic of songs. That's what it's all about, is everything is connected in one way or another. And the feelings that one person may have, maybe, when you write them down and when you sing them, it becomes a completely different thing. So, you know, that's the magic of art. That's the magic of taking a picture of something and putting it in a different context with other pictures. And suddenly it means something completely different. And that's what Jonathan and I do. So, that's just the way that happened. It is a song for my wife. Obviously, I'm deeply in love with my wife. And she's the most important person to me. And I was talking to her in the song, but I was using Jim's words in some cases and couching them in a different framework.
And she sings backup in the concert and on the CD. Jonathan Demme, since you have Neil Young singing and his wife being one of the backup singers on this, how much did you want to make of that when you were shooting? I mean, you could, like, there's a couple of, like, very meaningful glances they give each other, but you could have, like, really made a lot out of this. Do you know what I mean? You could have, like, how did you decide how much to notice that?
Well, a couple of things. One is that as far as Peggy Young goes in the film, one of the things that I really love about the movie is that for the first several songs, Peggy is part of this preposterously overqualified genius backup legion, including, you know, Emmylou Harris, Diana DeWitt, and that's just on the female side. And then at a certain point in the movie, later in the movie, when it starts opening up, Peggy comes forward and joins Neil side by side for a couple of songs there towards the end. I can't explain why, but there's just something very beautiful about the movement of Peggy in that context. And it's kind of thrilling, I think, to see these two side by side with their guitars singing these beautiful songs together and certainly exchanging glances. But, you know, with each other, and they're exchanging glances with everybody else on stage, too. When Neil and I first started talking very seriously about doing this film, which we just always describe as a performance film and not a concert film, because we didn't go down there to film a concert. We staged a concert in order to film it. And one of the things that Neil talked constantly about in our early conversations on the telephone was just his tremendous regard and love for the other musicians, Peggy and Emmylou and Ben Keith and everybody, and he spoke individually about every single person, and he would pepper our conversations with, you know, yeah, Anthony Crawford comes up on that song, and, you know, that's the song that Grant Boatwright plays the electric guitar on, and I'd be scribbling all this stuff down and just really getting very excited about the possibility of capturing all these strong bonds that exist between these brilliant musicians on film and making that part of the texture of the movie.
One of the things I like about the way you shot this, Jonathan Demme, is that it's so much about the music and about the emotion behind the music. I think there really are a lot of, you know, performance films that are about how hip a band is, about how cool and fashionable they are, about what a good time the audience in the concert hall was happening. Do you know what I mean? And it's not just about the music itself. And a lot of camera work is so restless at these things, making you think that, like, unless the camera is constantly moving and unless there's an edit every second, that you're going to be bored. And a lot of that sometimes distracts your attention from the music. And I feel like all the camera work, everything's done in service to the music and the emotion.
Well, to put even more of a point on it, one of the bottom line missions here was to make sure that every single lyric, every word of every song, which in our film kind of functions a little bit like stories, Neil's a kind of, is a storyteller with his songs, we wanted every single word to be just so easily accessed that nothing would intrude on just a complete intimate relationship between the audience and the message that Neil was singing about. And the other thing was, I wanted to make sure that we were up very, very close a lot of the time on Neil as he was singing these songs, so that his emotional state as he presented this stuff was something that we could be very, very akin to. And I definitely felt that you're right. stylish camera moves and dolly shots and crane shots and kinetic editing, all of which I love and have been used exceptionally well time and again with music and drama and what have you, but certainly in the music world, I felt, you know, that none of that stuff would serve us nearly as well as beautifully composed, beautifully lit. We had Ellen Kuras doing the lighting. She invented new colors in her artistic interpretation of what the songs meant to her. Nothing could serve us better than those kind of shots. And I really aspired to find ways and hope that our shots played a long time and were not interrupted by an edit to another shot unless we had something really worth going to. Operating on the premise that you know, we're providing the best seat in the house, so we don't need to be cutting around all the time. So what it all added up to, in a way, was I felt, you know, this is kind of bold. It's almost, in this day and age where the camera's always moving, who knows, maybe the fact that we're kind of settled in a little bit more and don't cut as much might feel kind of avant-garde at this stage of the game.
Neil Young, when you went back to the recording studio after the procedure to remove the aneurysm, were you in the same mood that you were before? You know, you'd had this terrible revelation about the aneurysm. You had the procedure. You got through it. It seemed to be successful. Were you in the same frame of mind that you were when you had started writing and recording those songs?
Well, now when I shake my head, you know, they put some coils inside my brain. And now when I shake my head, it's... No, just kidding.
But you're not kidding about
this. Radio, isn't it? Hey, come on, it's radio, Bob and Ray.
But you're not kidding about coils inside your brain, right?
No, they're a little platinum.
He was actually shaking his head just then. That was the darndest thing.
But what did they put inside your brain? What did they put inside?
Little platinum slinkies.
And what's
tiny
the purpose?
Tiny little slinkies. Well, they're flexible, and they're like, you know, they're springs kind of, and they're made out of the thinnest, smallest, most, you know, delicate platinum, and they, you know, they stuffed this thing full of them. They went in with this, you know, radiology thing or whatever. You know, they watched it on TV, and they sent this thing up through, you know, from my leg up through and into my head, and packed this little aneurysm full of these slinkies.
And that does what?
Fooled me. Fooled my health, my body completely. My body thought I had a bunch of scar tissue going in there. So scar tissue gets more scar tissue. So I think my body filled up the whole aneurysm with scar tissue, and now it's full of scar tissue and there's nothing there. The blood just goes flying by like nothing's wrong.
Huh. That's really amazing. So, be still.
He just scratched his head.
Well, I want to play another, like, really beautiful song from Prairie Wind. You know, one of the songs that you do in the performance film Heart of Gold. And this is a song that was written for your daughter. It's called I'm Here for You. Would you talk about writing this one?
Well, this is probably the second last song that I did before going back to New York. It's a song about, you know, it's about my daughter, and she's, you know, she's 21 and she's moving on. You know, she's in college, she's graduating, and I'm really proud of her, how well she's doing, and she's an artist. And you know, I of course I miss her all the time, but I really don't want to, you know, intrude. And so I was just trying to communicate to her that she had a place to go, but it wasn't a place she had to go. You know, if she needed me, that I was there, and that myself and her mother would be there for her if she ever needed us, and that she was, you know, free to go and free to stay, and that we were behind her all the way, you know. So it's just that kind of a song, and a kind of a letting go without letting go kind of.
Well, it's a great song. Here it is. It's I'm Here for You.
When your summer days come tumbling down and you find yourself alone, then you can come back
there things that you think are easier to say in a song than in conversation?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, on practically everything, actually, yeah. But, I'm glad that I can write songs, because I would have probably gone crazy by now if I couldn't have put some of these ideas down in a way that's obscure enough so that you can say them at any time. And yet, when you hear it, if you're thinking about it and you're wide open to it, then you can go a lot farther than the current conversation.
How did you both decide which songs to include in the performance film? Obviously, you know, the songs from Prairie Wind, but there are also earlier songs, early Neil Young songs on there. And you obviously had a lot of songs to choose from. So how did you decide which ones you wanted to include?
Well, Prairie Wind was all I cared about when we started making the movie. It was it. Just that suite of songs was a, for far as I'm concerned, a perfect, just amazing body of work unto itself. And we were pretty far down the line. We knew we were going to go to the Ryman. We knew that Manuel was going to do the costumes. We knew that Michael Zansky was going to do the backdrops. We knew that Andy Keir was going to cut it and Ellen was going to shoot it. And then I was in my kitchen one day and I suddenly went, wait a minute, we're going to have a 55-minute movie. So I called Neil up and said, and it's really pretty crude. I just said, if we only have 55 minutes and we're hoping that we can get this film into movie theaters, would it be possible to add an encore dimension to kind of rough out the running time, to flesh out the running time? And Neil right away said, I felt funny asking him that, but I did. And then he said right away, sure, let me think about it. Obviously, I'll have to draw from my Nashville body of work pretty much. And he also said he wanted to think about it and select songs that would be thematically compatible with the songs of Prairie Wind. So, off he went, and then we saw each other a little while later, and Neil had created a list of songs, and he showed them to me, and it was basically the songs that are in the movie and a couple of others, and it was such a treasure trove. But the funny thing for me is that I was so focused on Prairie Wind and my love for those songs that I thought that's terrific that our film will end with some wonderful of the earlier songs, but I had no idea that those earlier songs were going to wind up packing such a tremendously strong emotional wallop.
Well, the effect that you have with some of the old songs, you know, the effect I think that it registers on me anyways in the audience is that here you have some of the songs, Neil Young, that you wrote and recorded when you were a young man, and some of these are about age, and now you're singing them as, you know, someone who isn't a young man. I think, you're around 60 now? And so
yeah.
The songs...
What's so old about that?
So the songs, they have a different resonance, they have a different meaning. And you know, in the audience, like, you feel you... almost reflecting on the songs and how the sound of the songs have changed?
There's a trick. There's a trick in there to interrupt. Sorry to interrupt you. But what really happens with these songs is that the whole beginning of the film, we're singing songs that have never been heard by the audience that we're singing them for, and they're all brand new. So they're first-time presentations of the songs, which makes you listen. And you open up and start listening to something because you don't know what it is. And you're seeing it in a way that you've never seen anything from me before. So you're seeing it in a new way, and you're listening to new songs that are being done for the first time. So it really opens you up. So what happens when we get to the second half is that the audience is totally open to new material and listening to the words and trying to pick up on everything that these songs are saying, because you only have one shot to pick up on it. And we, when we go into the second part of it, it's basically a chronological trip through my music with a few departures from chronology, but it's starting with back in Buffalo Springfield and going through to I guess Harvest Moon or Harvest Moon. So it goes through that, but the thing is, you listen to it a lot more instead of celebrating, hey, there's another old song and he's doing these songs that I like. You're not doing that. You're still listening because you've been tuned into listening in the beginning and listening to the words. So they become part of the story because you've trained yourself to listen, and instead of just watching and celebrating these old tunes that you've heard before, you're listening to them like they're new tunes. And so I think that opens the door for people to go on a journey with the songs.
Neil Young and Jonathan Demme speaking with Terry Gross earlier this year. Here's another excerpt from the film.
Just, you know, being a rich hippie for the first time, I'd purchased a ranch, and I still live there today, and there was a couple living on it that were the caretakers, and an old gentleman named Louis Avila and his wife Clara, and there was this old blue Jeep there, and Louis took me for a ride in this blue Jeep, and he gets me up there on the top side of the place, and there's this lake up there that fed all the pastures, and he says, "Well, tell me, how does a young man like yourself have enough money to buy a place like this?" And I said, "Well, I'm just lucky, Louis, just real lucky." He said, "Well, that's the darnest thing I ever heard." Then I wrote this song for him.
The songs in the movie are, the takes are all so good that you almost feel like, God, it must have been post-dubbed or something, because no concert goes this smoothly, you know, that with, like, note-to-note perfection. Jonathan Demme, how many takes were there for each of the songs? How did you manage to get such good takes?
Well, we didn't do takes per se. The concert was performed two nights in a row, August 19th and August 20th, and the curtain parted, and the music was there. In fact, the music started before the curtain parted, and we didn't redo any of the songs. We filmed them on both nights, and then later we were able to either select which night seemed to be the better of two excellent performances, because frankly, each night was unbelievably great. And every once in a while, we did some combination of the two nights. In one instance, in Old King, which is a song I love, I got so carried away that, with Neil's permission, we actually made that longer and stretched out the instrumental part of that, so we could really just let the audience just something about everybody up there doing that kind of what I call a hoedown, and Emmylou Harris strumming amazing guitar, and Neil rocking out on the banjo and what have you, and so that was it. We didn't do any retakes. You have to realize that the amount of preparation for Neil and his fellow band members that preceded the show, they rehearsed for 10 solid days straight ahead. Like Neil said earlier, everybody knew that they were introducing the Prairie Wind songs for the very first time. No one out there ever would have heard these. The CD hasn't come out yet. It was going to be a brand new experience, and they had the unique thrill of presenting it for the first time on the stage at the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville to an audience that had been largely invited and was made up of songwriters and musicians and people who just adore the kind of music that they were about to hear. So everybody was just at their peak form, and we just got the cameras in focus and they let it rip, and it was quite an exquisite night of music.
Neil Young, one of the things that adds to the emotional depth of the movie is that on stage, before introducing one of the songs, that has to do with your father. You talk about how he had recently died after having dementia for 10 years. And you talk about how interesting it was to watch him living in the moment. And I thought, that's the kind of positive thing to find about somebody who has dementia, is that they're living in the moment. Did you hold on to that as a way of seeing something positive about his dementia and his inability to remember the past?
Well, I just focused on what his life was about now and not what it was about, you know, what it used to be about, just more because the love is still there and everything. But I couldn't think of any other way to describe it, mm-hmm. because that's really all that was that I think was left. I don't know. Perhaps it was easier for him to remember things than it was for him to speak about what he remembered. So I don't know the connection. I don't know whether people with dementia actually can't remember anything or whether they can't put the words together to explain what it is, because just putting a sentence together takes an incredible amount of reasoning power in the present. And it really, we take it for granted and we speak along, and that's quite a creation, the human body, that enables us to think and talk and do all these things at the same time. So as it slowly breaks down and the connections get lost, it's kind of hard to say exactly where things are and what's happening. But I know that my dad was living in the moment, so I use that phrase to describe what was going on, and that's the best I could do.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for talking with us. Thank you.
It was fun, Terry. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Neil getting up.
Neil Young and Jonathan Demme speaking with Terry Gross earlier this year. Young and Demme collaborated on the performance film Heart of Gold, which has just been released on DVD.